morning, everybody. We're happy to see you. I'll be the lightning. Rick will be the thunder. He's going to give most of it. But I just want to share a little bit about our family. Most of you probably know us, but some of you might not. Wow, time has gone by. Way back in 2006, we're from Omaha, and we had been the head of our missions committee for 10 years at our Bible church there, and we had been praying. We thought, you know, we have a lot of missionaries we support as a church. We have a lot of faithful Christians here in our church, but we've never sent out a missionary. And we thought, surely God has like an individual or a couple or a family that's being called, and they don't realize it, so we will help them. By praying them to the field. So we started praying, and nothing happened. And we kept praying and kept praying, and from time to time he's still praying, yes, are you, yes, nothing happened. 10 years went by, and we did things to bring missions to the forefront in our church and try and get them to really connect with missionaries as real people. And I finally got really impatient, and I said, Lord, if there is somebody that you're calling to the mission field and they just don't know it, could you make them miserable until they realize it? That took 4 weeks, and I was miserable in our brand new, we had purchased my dream home, and I was in the master bedroom of our dream home, and I was thinking, I love my life. I love living here. I love my work at the church. I just love my life. I love this house. I love it, love it, love it. And in that moment, God had me realize that it was us, that he was calling us to missions. And I thought, oh, no. I thought my husband's going to think I've lost it. So the weekend rolled around. He's having coffee. He's talking politics and work, and he took a breath. And I'm really good at smooth segues, so I said, do you think it's us? And he said, yes, do you? I said, yes, but are we talking about the same thing? And we were. And then we laughed because we thought, you know, we're not missionary material. We have nothing to offer. We didn't think we had the correct spiritual gifts. He's not a pastor. He's not an evangelist. He helps in the background, and so do I. And we thought, we don't have anything to offer. But we really felt strongly that God was calling us. And so we prayed about it, and we specifically asked for God to have missionaries we know contact us with work we could do. And my private prayer, I thought, Lord, what if this is just an emotion? Before I pull my children away from their friends, from their grandparents, from their cousins, from their life in America, I want to be sure it's not an emotion. So I prayed, okay, Lord, I don't mean a blanket group email. I mean, I want a missionary to say to me, Ellen, have you considered full-time missions? So it took 5 days. Yeah, 10 years, 5 days. And we got a group email from the director of the Malaga Media Center, where they reach Morocco, saying they needed a full-time computer person and a part-time bookkeeper. And we thought, wow, we could do that. But I thought, you know, Lord, I said, not a blanket email. Walked into church on Sunday. There was a missionary visiting. He's known me forever. Always said, Ellen, how are you? How are the kids? He walked up, stuck out his hand, and he said, Ellen, have you considered full-time missions? And my knees buckled. I said, John, why do you say that to me? He goes, I have no idea. The Lord just told me to say that to you. He goes, but I have a sneaky suspicion. I said, well, so do we. Long story short, a year later, we ended up in Malaga, Spain. And we've been ministering there for 10 and a half years, and it's been a tremendous blessing. It's been awful, and it's been wonderful, and, you know, just real. It's just been what God has for us. So our youngest daughter is the last of our three that we brought back to the United States. So 2 years ago when we were here, bringing her back for college in America, we were literally on our face begging God every day in our devotional time, just begging him, can we be done? Can we come back and live near our children? And the answer was no. And so we decided, okay, here we go. And we went back. And we assumed that that's where he had us for the rest of our career. And so I was in our little Spanish cottage, and I was painting my daughter's bedroom to be my office. And I'm thinking, I should have known better. I was thinking, I love my life. I love my little Spanish cottage. I love my friends at work. I love the work I do. And God said to me, not audibly, but just, you know, it was, don't get too settled because I'm moving you on. And like a child, I argued. And I said, but Lord, you know, I love this work. We love this ministry. How can you move us on? And he said, trust me. It's always back to that. Every year, year after year. Trust me, daughter. And so I thought, well, I'm not going to say anything because I know for sure that God leads through my husband, not through me. And so I just waited it out. I said, well, Lord, I trust you. Do something. And a week later, Rick walked in and he said to me, you know how we were looking for a place to volunteer for the summer because at our work, the cameras shut down because of the heat. We don't film videos during the summer. So it's a lot more wasting time waiting for it to be over if you're not on furlough to the United States visiting your churches. And so he said, you know, we'd look for that camp. Avant doesn't do that for missionary kids anymore, but here's this camp in France, and they need a guy to do the adventure sports and logistics of planning overnight hikes, and they need a person to plan the theme parties every night, which is what I've done for 30 years. And I just looked at him, and so he said, what do you think? Should I go ahead and fill out the application to volunteer for the summer? I said, yeah, go ahead. Why don't we do that? And a couple months later, we'd gone through all the paperwork and the background checks and yada, yada. We had our Skype interview with the director, which was unbelievable what a fit we were. And afterwards, I just turned to my husband. He goes, well, Ellen, he goes, every year I ask God, do you want us to stay here in Malaga and minister where we are? He goes, can we go home to the States and be with our kids? Or do you want us in a different ministry somewhere else? He goes, every year God has said to me, stay where you are and work with contentment. And he goes, this year God has been preparing me that he is moving us on. And then I found this camp. We couldn't assume that it was the right thing until we went. So we went and we worked all of July and all of August this last summer. And every single day it became more clear that it's what God had for us. And so we thought, well, the Lord's going to have to work out a lot of details. It's run by a different mission agency, but we want to stay with ours. We felt strongly led to stay with ours. They would need to agree to loan us, all these things that would have to happen. And so at every step of the way, we prayed, Lord, if this is not from you, we only want you to open the door you want us to walk through, because we're stupid and we'd kind of walk through the wrong one all the time. And so we just ask him, close every door but the one you want us to walk through. And at every hurdle, God opened the door wider and wider and wider. So in a few short weeks, we're headed back to Spain to get our car. And people have asked, the name of the town is Le Bourg-d'Oisson in France. And Rick is going to share more about our ministry. Our hope today, our biggest hope today, is that you would be willing to pray for us, that you would sign up right there at the table to receive our emails or our paper newsletter that we send out from time to time. If we lose prayer support, we can't make it. So we appreciate you very much and what you do. Thanks.
Thanks for letting us be here. We always love coming and seeing you folks. You're such a blessing to us. Condesim, or in English, Camp of the Peaks. It's known as a haven in France for God to save the lost and to strengthen the found. And it has a really great story. In fact, God was already working to bring this camp into existence before missionaries were even thinking about having a camp in France. The land that the camp is on is part of what used to be a small mountain village. And there was a bakery, of course, because it's France. And there was a little school, and there were several farms. And the land there stays in the family for generation after generation after generation. This property had come down in the late 20s, early 30s to two surviving brothers. That's all that was left. One of them disappeared in the mountains. That's all they know. There's no other story, no other record. He just disappeared one day. And the other brother, even though he was fairly young, just died suddenly. So the land was vacant, and it just was abandoned and left that way for years and years and years. Now you have to fast forward to the 60s when some missionaries from the United States said, you know, we ought to start a camp over in France to reach the young people there, and we need to find some land. So they were looking for land to purchase. Same time, the French government went, hey, there's that land that's been standing vacant up there for so long. We ought to auction that off. And so the Americans, who had $5,000 that they'd raised here to buy land, heard about the auction, went to the auction, looked at the land, went, yeah, we love this land. And so the way the French did auctions back then They would light three candles, put them in a box with a screen on the front or a glass thing so you could see them, but you couldn't get to them. And as long as the candles were burning, the auction continued. And when the last candle went out, the auction was over. I don't know why they did it that way, but that's how they did it. And I think they were in a box so somebody couldn't do their bid and then go, I win. But anyway, so the auction starts, candles are burning, and people start bidding on the property. The missionaries bid their $5,000 and the candles went out, even though there was still time left on them. So they were thrilled. Hey, we've got this land. This is great. They go in the next day to pay for the land, and they find out what we're finding out. There's a lot of bureaucracy in France. And so along with the auction bid that they had to pay, they also had to pay fees and taxes and charges and a few other things, and they didn't have the money. They had bid $5,000, and that's all they had. So they start praying about it. They had a few days before they would default and somebody else would get the land. So they start praying about it. It's like, God, we thought you wanted us to have this land. This land's perfect for a camp. You know, the candles went out, God. What's going on? And at that time in France, there were student protests going on, much like there is now, that turned into student it's protest season, that turned into riots, and it shut down the trains, sort of like now, the trains and the buses and the factories, and the economy of France plummeted. And the value of the franc that they were on at the time dropped so much in value to the American dollar that the $5,000 was now enough to pay for the bid and the charges and the taxes and the fees and everything else. And so they were able to get the land. And it just goes to show that, to me, God never seems to work in a straight line. And he just does it the way he wants to do it, where he gets the glory for it. And it's awesome to step back and watch that after it's happened sometimes. When you're in it, it's not so fun. So they had the land. Now, these buildings are 200, 300 years old, and they had stood vacant for decades. And so they were pretty dilapidated. So Christians from Europe and the United States went over to restore them and get them up so that they could actually work as a camp. The first people that were working there slept in this barn, in the hay, on the ground, and there was no running water. They would use the stream down at the end of the road for water. But they got the camp up and running. Can you go to the next one? And people started coming from France. And the word got out about this camp. More people were coming. They were running out of room to hold everybody that wanted to come to the camp. And so they started looking around. This building is about from me to Tyler, across the road from the photo, from the building in the previous photo. Okay? And the guy that owned it didn't live there. He lived someplace else. And so they offered to buy it, and he said no. They offered him more money. He said no. Finally, he just kind of said, I'm not selling to you. And he didn't come out and say it, but we think it was because they were Christians. And so he said, I'm never selling to you. So you can go back. You can kind of see the mountain behind us there. We are on a mountain, the camp. That winter, an avalanche came racing down the side of the mountain, headed towards the village and the camp. The only building it hit was this one, about this distance from the rest of the camp. Okay? Took the roof right off the top of it. The man who owned it said, that building's over 300 years old and I'm not putting the money into it. I don't use it. So he sold it to the camp for a price drastically below what they had ever offered him. God has always had a purpose for this camp, and he just continues to provide. All right, now we can go to that. So, we've been in Spain for 10 and a half years ministering to Muslims in North Africa. And the Muslims in North Africa are actually sometimes an easier field than the Spanish, because the Muslims understand there is a supreme being and they understand that we need to serve him. It's just then redirecting them to the true supreme being that there is. In Spain, they kind of have an idea that there is a God, but they don't want him involved in their lives personally because they want to live for them. They'll go to the religious festivals. That's more because it's cultural. And so, in fact, I had people tell me that when I would witness to them in Spain. There may be a God, but I don't want him involved in my life because I live for me. Okay? And others would tell us, well, there might be a God, but I've done all the things according to the Catholic religion that I need to do this year. So if there is one, I'm good. I've got it covered. Pastor Don had asked me, you know, about how did we know God was moving us on? 10 and a half years we've been in this ministry. It was kind of just like we were in our routine there. And it was, we had finally adjusted. We knew how to do things in Spain. But I was always praying specifically for what God's will is. God tells us that he wants our obedience more than sacrifices. And so I always told him, we'll do whatever you want, but you've got to make it clear to me. Because like Ellen said, we're kind of stupid. And he's the same God who says, test me and see if I'm not good, see if I won't open the stairs. So I believe that if we're willing to do God's will and we're praying in his will, it's okay to go, can you show me clearly that you want me to do this because I want to do it, but I'm not sure? So that was part of the prayers that I was going through is, if you want us here, have this happen. If you want us to move on, do this and this and this so that I know for sure, because I want to do the right thing. I want to do your will, but I don't know what it is. And so God just brought things into occurrence, just like I had asked every time, to let us know that, okay, you've been there 10.5 years. Now it's time to move somewhere else. And at the time, we didn't know it was the camp. Then we started praying at the camp. We need to know, yes or no. And again, all those things fell into line. And it's funny, I'm 57 years old, and I've got a lot of physical problems, and God is taking me to work with young people in the mountains of France. I'm like, really? But again, it goes back to, he's given us everything we need for life and godliness, and it all comes through his power. Just like the camp came into existence through his power, he works through us through his power. He doesn't expect us to know everything. He doesn't expect us to be able to do everything, but just to trust him and he'll work. And again, he gets the glory through it. And so we were a little intimidated about going to work at a camp, but we know that God is working through that. He's made that clear to us. And so we can trust him. And so we had this image of how people would respond and what people in Europe thought of God. And one of our friends, when we were talking about the fact that God was calling us to France, said, well, I thought they were all Christians up there. Why would you go to France? Well, as we've studied France now, we have found that our impression of what Europeans think of God was drastically different. Go ahead to the next one, Tyler. Remember I said the Muslims, they know there's a supreme being, and the Spanish, they had an idea there's a God out there. They accepted that fact, but they didn't really want to have a personal relation. In France, there's about 65 million people that live there. 5 million of them in a survey said that they had some relationship to religion of some type. Most of them are Muslim. 5 million. The other 60 million said they have absolutely no relationship to any religion at all, and the vast majority of them are atheists. They don't even believe God exists. When we were at camp last summer, we were talking to some of the young people, and they would just say to us flat out, there's no God. God doesn't exist. That's just a crutch people use. When our country was coming into existence in the late 1700s, France was already in the process of pushing God out of life and society. It was all about the being illuminated. It was all about enlightenment. It was all about reason, human reason and science. And even at that time, if you believed in God or were associated with religion, you were lesser than those who believed in science to answer all of life's questions. So for over 200 years, the French have systematically deleted God from society and life to the point now where if a person makes a decision to follow Christ, it can result in total separation from their family and friends. They'll just turn their back on them and ostracize them. Now, we understood that coming from a Muslim-based ministry, because that's what happens in that kind of culture. We had no idea that that was happening in France also. Can you go to the next one? The culture we're finding is very different in France too. They have a perfectionistic idea of life. If you can't do something perfectly, don't even bother trying, which is so drastically different than what we were used to in Spain, where it was like, yeah, if I get it right, I get it right. If I don't get it right, that's okay too. I'm done. I'm moving on. But if you don't get things right, they'll criticize you. They'll ridicule you. And there's this pressure always to be perfect. You add to that the French personality that many of them have, where they come across very proud, but actually behind all that is this attitude of, I can't do it. I'm never going to measure up. Things are always going to be bad. And they actually even have a saying that the pire est toujours certain. It's the worst is always certain. Whatever the worst is, that's going to happen. And so you take that attitude and then the pressure they constantly have to be perfect. And if you're not perfect, you're going to get ridiculed and made fun of and all that. And the French will build walls around themselves to protect themselves emotionally. They don't let people in. They don't trust people. And they keep everybody at arm's reach. And it's so bad in France that they have an institute for a national observatory of suicide. And it did a study, and they found that there are so many suicides in France every year that it works out to one an hour because of the desperation these people have. They don't believe in God, so they have no hope in anything. And now they have this attitude and this constant pressure. And so there's a lot of desperation for these people. Go ahead to the next one, please. So how do we minister to young people in that culture and with those kind of issues? And what the camp has found year after year of doing this, they've been in existence for 50 years now, is that we encourage them through everything we do. Doesn't matter whether we're doing art or sports or whatever it is, it's always encouraging them, always telling them they're doing a good job, always building them up and giving them confidence. Some of the kids told me, even the unsaved kids, told me that they come to the camp year after year because it's the only place they feel safe. It's the only place they're encouraged all year long. And so they come back even though they're not saved. And they know we're an evangelical Christian camp. It's in the paperwork. And once you've been there, you know it. Because we have Bible study every morning, Bible lessons. We have discussion time after that about those things. But they come back year after year because it's the only place they feel safe. And so we encourage them through everything we do. The other thing we do, they know we're Christian, so we live out Christ before them. We make an effort to show Christ's love no matter what we're doing. So for instance, not to build myself up, but just to give you an example, I work on service team most of the time, or at least most of the time, one time that we've been there. And that means I'm mopping hallways, I'm cleaning bathrooms, I'm serving meals to 100 campers plus staff every day, 3 meals a day, and doing the dishes afterwards. And we do it with an attitude of Christian love, of serving them. And it's so foreign to the French way of thinking that they know that the other thing about it, they know that the volunteers there, because of the French government, the camp can't give you free room and board as a volunteer, somebody working there. They have to pay for room and board. And so they know that the service team has given up their time and paying to be there just to do all this work for them and make the camp nice. And so the French kids start talking about this, and they start asking, you know, what's with that? You know, why are they being so nice? Why are they so kind to me? Why do they seem to have a happiness or joy when they're doing this? And then the counselors can say, well, let me tell you why. Let me tell you what Christ has done for that person. Let me tell you how Christ works in our lives. And it gives them an inroad to share because they've seen an example. So we are always encouraging them, giving them that safe environment, and then we live Christ out before them. And little by little, it starts to work through those walls they have. Go ahead to the next one, please. Another thing the camp has found over the years is that when people are doing something creative, they're more open to spiritual conversations. Now, I'm not creative, so I don't understand that, but I know in Genesis it tells us that we're made in God's image, and the first words of the Bible are, in the beginning, God created. So I just wonder if we're doing something that's so similar to the image of God, if we're not more in tune with spiritual conversations. I don't know. But the camp offers a lot of art because the French love art, and it's another way to bring people in. So whether it's pottery or watercolor or sketching or music or even dance and theater type stuff, they have these workshops. And so for 2 hours a day, every other day at camp, these kids are in those workshops with the same instructors. And at first, they come in. Ellen does. Can you go to the next one? Ellen does a sketching workshop. And she talked about how the first couple days, those kids would be like this. They don't trust. They're not going to step out and put themselves in the spotlight. They're just going to hang back and see what's happening. But as time went on, over and over and over, these kids started opening up to her, started sharing their lives, started sharing their problems, asking her for advice and counsel. They started to trust because she could build that relationship with them, and they were doing something creative. And so she was able to share with them what God had done in her life and what the Bible had to say about the things they were talking about. And many of them afterwards would thank her for her advice and her counsel, and she's still counseling some of them online. So we build those relationships because they have to know that we care before they're ever willing to listen to what we have to say. Can you go to the next one? I mentioned I work on service team, but there's other times when I get to do sports and recreation. And it's another way to build relationships with these kids, because some people build relationships by doing something they like with other people who do the same things. And so whether we're rock climbing or playing football or playing football, or whether we're playing other things or hiking, it didn't matter. It was time with them doing something they enjoy, and we were able to build those relationships so that, for instance, during the discussion time after the Bible studies, they would be talking about issues and concerns or questions they had about the lesson or whatever, and I was able to share with them from the Bible what they were talking, you know, things that were specific to them and their situation. And they would listen to those. They didn't always accept it. You could see that. But the word goes out, and then the Holy Spirit uses that in their lives. And there were times, go ahead to the next one, where when we're going on these hikes, now we're at, the camp is like at 2,000, 3,000 feet in elevation. We came from sea level. So that right away was a hard thing for me. But then sometimes we go up like 5,000 or 6,000 feet in a matter of an hour, hour and a half when we're on these hikes. So I, as an old guy, am just gasping for air, literally, thinking I'm going to die. My heart's pounding. And I'm getting peppered by questions from these young people who are able to sprint up and down the mountainside. Peppered with questions. What about God? How do you know there is a God? How do you know God's working in your life? How do you know if God is speaking? How do I know if God's speaking to me? There were questions from unsaved and saved kids alike. Because we have Christian kids who come back to the camp year after year after year because it's the only church they have. There are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of towns in France. There is no evangelical presence at all. And so these kids tell me, I come back here every year for this two-week camp because it's the only church I get, and it recharges me to go back out and live for Christ. We have a twofold aspect of ministry at the camp, to reach the lost and then to equip and encourage the saved to go back out and live victorious lives in a culture where it's very difficult to even be a Christian. And so we build those relationships, and we help in both ways to bring them closer to Christ. The camp itself, during the summer season, July and August, we are on from the 1st of July until the end of August, from about 7 in the morning to 11 o'clock at night on the go. And we get, like, there'll be a two-week camp, and then those kids will leave. We have a day to clean things up, and the next group starts rolling in. We have junior high school age. We have young adult age. We have little kid age. And then we have a family camp. And even the family camp, they're saved and unsaved, and some of the saved people just got saved last summer at camp and things like that, and they come year after year because they enjoy the environment. But you can see God working through them. And then others, there was a pastor, a French man who's a pastor I was talking to. He comes there because it's his chance to recharge, to go back out, to shepherd his flock. And so we offer that for them in August. But we are on like that. And the staff at the camp is very small, very small. And we can't do those camps without volunteers. The English language camp, which we have for the junior high school, the little kids also, and the young adult, is another draw we have because we offer English language and they want to improve their English. The way we do that is we recruit college-age Christians from North America to come over and just to be the English language portion of that. And so they'll hang out with the kids all day long, build those relationships, and let them practice their English. The counselors are French Christians who have gone through the government's process of being certified as a camp counselor, and they're there. They're amazing. We are humbled by the commitment of those French young people who are counselors. And some of them got saved at camp and then come back to camp as counselors. Some of them that were counselors this past summer are now in the mission field. They are just on fire for God, this generation of those who are coming to Christ. The volunteers for the service team, we can't keep the place clean and do the dishes and all that without volunteers. So sometimes that's a church group that comes over. Sometimes it's just a couple here and a couple there that show up, or some young people on a gap year between high school and college or whatever. And we cannot run the camps in the summertime without volunteers. The rest of the year, we have camps periodically throughout the rest of the year, week-long camps, weekend camps, that kind of thing, and we staff those, but it's not as intense as the summer season. And the other thing we do during the off-season, if you will, is the maintenance on the camp that we can't get to in the summer. And we also have outreach into the community because there are many villages right around us that have no evangelical presence at all. And so we do outreach in the communities and meet those people. Ellen and I are going to be joining some clubs and organizations in the area so that we have more of a circle of influence for people to witness to. And we hope, we plan to work with a French missionary who's in the area to hopefully plant a church in the village of 2,000 to 3,000 people that's there in the valley. Because right now for us to go to church, it's about an hour's drive through the mountain passes. And so that's also on the docket of hopefully planting a church in that little town. Ellen's going to come now and share a little bit more. And then if we have time, we'll take questions. Can you go to the next slide, Todd?
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks.
It's fun to watch Rick at the camp because he has the gift of helps. And he is always on the move there. Every morning they have Bible study, and then discussion time, they have worship time, and then they do all these activities. And so, like the camp, the teens camp is like 14 days long. So they do that day after day after day, and then towards the end, they do a 3-day, 2-night hike. And the kids have backpacks, and they just walk up the Alps, and there's no running water, and they take everything with them. And so it's a really powerful time. Like the first night they're there, they have worship time around the campfire, and then they have testimony time. And that is often where we hear that from the last year's camp, this camper trusted Christ as their Savior. And they're a little bit shy about saying so when they come back. And so they're hearing it from their own peers up at that. And then the next day, they have one of the most powerful things they do at camp is that they have alone time with God for 2 hours. They spread out in these big meadows at the top of the mountains. And they say, okay, we're going to spread out. You have 2 hours. We want you to really think about what you've learned this week and really take some time to talk to God. And God does big things in those times. So there's a lot of logistics in getting 85 teenagers to the top of a mountain. And they cook their own food, and everybody lugs their own food, and so Rick is a big part of helping get the tents ready and the backpacks and all the food divided and all the elements of the camp stoves and things like that. So he's always, always busy. Go to the next one. My work really varies too. There's a lot of flexibility at the camp. We have to be ready to do whatever needs done. Get up at 7 in the morning, make breakfast for 100 campers. Then I go to the meeting to hear what the day's theme is for that night. Take care of my coworker's child for a little bit while she's in worship team. But one of the big things that the French love is something called the veille, which is a themed evening event. And the counselors come up with the themes. And so they're very unique every time. And then they tell me that morning. They say, okay, so tonight's theme, the French, we love this Clue game. You know, like the board game Clue where you go from room to room. But you're playing it out in actual rooms. And they say, so, okay, it starts in a minion wedding venue. And it's the wedding of these minions. And then we need a Beauty and the Beast library. And we need a evil stepmother's potion-making lab. And we need a Zorro's lair. And we need a caveman's cave. And we need a vine for Tarzan to swing on. And they just go on. And pray for my attitude, because sometimes I think, are you kidding me? Because they don't, like, the town is 15 minutes away. It's 3,000 people. And they don't sell, like, poster board. They don't sell construction paper, things like that. And so I'm sometimes really scrounging to make whatever it is they come up with. But they're really talented, and it's really powerful. Like one of the nights they said, it was the second day of camp, and they said, okay, tonight, they said, okay, the kids are really like this, and they're all closed off right now. And so tomorrow we're doing year in a day. And in the morning they start with New Year's. And at worship time, it's Valentine's Day. And at lunchtime, it's Easter. And at Gute, which is the 4 o'clock snack, it's Independence Day. Both French and American, same colors, same month. And then evening is a Thanksgiving dinner. And our evening event is Christmas. We're going to celebrate Christmas. And it was amazing to watch because these closed-off kids who are very... France is kind of like a nation of introverts, and so they're very thoughtful, they're very considerate, but they're very private, and they're very slow to open up, which is something we need them to do at camp. We need to open their hearts to the truth. And so these kids who said that there is no God are joining arm in arm and teaching us in French to sing these songs about the birth of the Messiah. It was very fascinating. And after that, everything was changed. After that, it was family for the rest of the two-week time. So their ideas are amazing. But, okay, go ahead to the next one. From time to time, I get to go back with permission of both our director at camp in France and my director in Malaga, because we had been working on this idea of creating a television program for children in Moroccan Arabic, because I was working on this with my two Arab coworkers, and he said, you know, there is nothing for our children in Arabic. You know, if you think about all the things we have here in America, we have Sunday school programs, we have Veggie Tales, we have Focus on the Family for Kids, all these things. There is nothing. These kids are in Islamic schools being brainwashed all day and not able to say that they're a Christian because their parents could go to jail, and they're just being brainwashed. So they really want something for their kids. So once a year, that group meets in an undisclosed location in another country, and the leaders of the underground churches from all of North Africa come to this conference, and they share with all the mission agencies who work in those regions what they most need in their country. And so the Tunisia delegation says, we need this. The Algeria delegation says, we need that. And the Moroccan delegation stood up, and the number one thing they wanted was programs for their children in Moroccan Arabic, which is what we'd already been working on. So it's been very challenging to get it started. This week, they're actually, tomorrow morning, they're starting to record the first puppet programs that we wrote, and I bought these puppets. So please pray for that. There's a Moroccan named Zubair there to help with that, and they're beginning the phases of creating this children's program. So I get to go back and help with that from time to time. But just pray for that project to really launch. It's a very important one. Go ahead to the next one. So when people say, where are you from? I say, well, we're moving to the mountains in France. Well, where? Okay, the French Alps, you know. And they go, oh, aren't you so excited? I go, yes, you know, we really are. But we're nervous too, because change is exciting, but it is really exhausting. When we get back, we leave in mid-May, and our car is there in Malaga. We'll drive the 18 hours to France. That French paperwork, we're going to start that bureaucracy. The word bureaucracy means those who rule from desks. It's a French word. They do it well. And please pray for that process to go well. It can be nerve-wracking and time-consuming and expensive. So pray for us as we work on getting the documents we need, getting them translated into French, getting through that process. It can be very challenging. French bureaucracy. For example, to open a bank account, we have to have a bank account in order to rent a place and get our utilities set up. But to open a bank account, you have to have something you have to show your utility bill. So you kind of see the concept. It just goes round and round. So we need patience. We're going to work all of those summer camps And then after, we're going to live at camp for the summer, not year-round, just for the summer, because we'll have just gotten there. And then in the fall, we'll be looking for a place to rent. Right now, we haven't seen much of anything to rent, so God needs to work a miracle in that regard. It's a small area. Not many people move there to rent places. We're required by the sending agency to pass the B2 level of French, which is the upper intermediate level of French. Have any of you ever learned a second language or a third language? Well, she raised her hand. You never know. I know, because I'm a Midwestern girl, and so it was hard for me to learn Spanish. And to this day, my grammar is pretty bad about future tense and past tense. And the Spanish are pretty informal and pretty forgiving of that, because they say, well, I don't speak a word of English, so no worries. Your Spanish is beautiful, which means that it sounds like their accent, because I learned it in their region. It's not really beautiful. It's muy, muy feo. But so we're switching, and we need to learn that French. There's lots of silent letters. There's just a lot of challenging things about it. In Omaha, there's this dear lady at one of our supporting churches, and she's a French teacher. So she said, well, I'm retired, and I'll meet with you for conversation each week. And it goes pretty well, and then all of a sudden I switch into Spanish. But there's some things that are really close, like the verb forms. And so sometimes I just say it kind of in a French way and just guess. Pray for me in a perfectionistic culture. That's not how I roll. But I'm going to try really hard, so pray for me. And that I can have a thick skin about criticism. I grew up in a household where my parents never criticized. They corrected, but they never criticized. Great parent. I have amazing parents. So we need to learn that language. And old dog, new trick. Here we go. And people say to me, but what if you can't learn it? I go, listen, it's a requirement. God's going to cause us to be able to learn it. I know we're in our 50s, but he's going to cause it to happen. And we need to learn to live in that new culture. What does that mean? Okay. Spain is our part of Spain. Northern Spain is much more formal, much more educated. Our part of Spain, in the very, very southern tip, is kind of like living in a nation of extroverts, which means that when it's 3 o'clock in the morning and the family is walking down the street with their preschooler playing soccer, they're all literally shouting at the top of their lungs, even though your bedroom's right there and your window's open because there's no air conditioning. They're a nation of extroverts. And so anything goes, literally anything. And so we're moving to this new culture. And so we've been studying the culture because you make so many mistakes and it's hard to get accepted by the people. But to earn their trust and give the gospel, you have to be accepted by the people. So American culture. So if Anne says to me, oh, that's a pretty blouse, in America, the courteous response is, thank you. If I say thank you in France, I'm considered arrogant, like I'm expecting a compliment. I am supposed to say, oh, do you think so? Or if you meet a man and the American man says to him, so what do you do? The French person will start shouting at them, you Americans, all you care about is how much money I make. You're supposed to accept me for who I am, because they believe in fraternity and equality. And so all these things that would, you know, we don't mean to be rude. We think that they're rude. They think that we're rude because we're doing things that in their culture are rude. And so we're trying. But man, pray for us. So we're learning, and it's a year of feeling like a toddler, like you don't know how to do things, like you don't know where to buy it, like you don't know if it is for sale in their country, or if so, what to call it. And you feel like a toddler for about a year, which can wear thin. So pray for us. So, okay, you can go to the next one. So please pray for our, we need flexibility and grace and humility. Our team, our full-time team, is going from 5 people, there's been 5 people for years, to 10 people in 1 year. This other new couple, lovely couple, and their two young children are coming. Rick and I are coming, and a French man is coming. And so the team is doubling in size, and I have to be really straight with you. The worst thing about missions is missionaries. Because we're sinful. We're just like you. We get tired. We get cranky. We blow it. I used to think, before I was a missionary, that missionaries were more spiritual. No, they're not. They're just more tired. And they're under lots of pressure. And lots of satanic attack. And so working to bring unity, when we got to our team in Malaga, there were families not speaking to one another. And so we worked very hard for years to help bring unity to that team. And so there, it is challenging to have a team grow. And everybody involved has to just give more grace, more grace, more grace. Especially because, have you ever watched people from another culture and they're speaking in another language? If you can't understand what they're saying, what do you watch? You watch their facial expressions and their mannerisms and their body language. And if their body language is putting off, I am so irritated with this coworker of mine. What kind of testimony is that to the 100 French diners? So it really matters. So pray for us about that. We need that mental and physical stamina, you know, adjusting to the elevation, adjusting to the new work, adjusting to the new team, adjusting to the new culture, adjusting to the new language. And it's very mentally and physically tiring. It's just the whole year you just feel like you desperately need a nap. It's pitiful. We need finances for this move and all the transition that comes with it, for the rental deposits, for the transition years are, quite frankly, expensive, and the language lessons. We need the ability for our minds to learn that new language so that we can get to know our neighbors. For those of you who read our updates, you might have read what God did about opening this door into this couple, Bernadette and Jean-Claude, who live across the street from camp. They're a retired couple, and like with Avant Ministries, we have families who have been in France for 2 years now working to get into a family's home, that someone would welcome them into their home, consider them that good of friends. And God worked a miracle with this couple, and she spoke Spanish and wanted to practice Spanish with me, and she loved my sketches. She would come talk to me for an hour while I sketched, and finally she said, "Sketch my home. It's 300 years old and beautiful. Been in their family forever." And I said, I will sometime. So I finished the sketch and watercolor, and I took it over, and I gave it to her, and she called her husband out, and he came out and looked at it, and it's his father's home, his grandfather's home. And literally, he started crying, and he said, "Tomorrow, you and bring your husband, you are my guests, you are coming into my home." So he established this friendship with this really unlikely couple that's really annoyed that the camp is even there in their yard. And so pray for that. Pray for them. They're in their retirement years. They desperately need Christ before they die. But just for that ability to make friends in a culture like that. And to build those relationships and to be able to share the gospel with the people around us. It's just so important. It's unbelievable how much they need Christ. So can you go to the next one for me? Wow, look at that. These campers come because they love nature and they don't believe in God. And every day, day after day after day after day, they're sharing the gospel, sharing the gospel, sharing the gospel. Then they go to the top where literally all of creation is just shouting out the presence of God to them. And big, big things happen. One of my students in my art class is named Anael. And she was just one of the hardest shells, just frowned all the time at everybody and looking like this. And in art class, somebody said to her, "So what do you like best about the camp?" And she is really direct, like a French person. She goes, "Well, I tell you what I don't like. I don't like how much they talk about God. I am sick of hearing about it." She says, "I did not come here for God. I came here for me." So she went on this hike. She didn't want to go. And she came, and her hard, hard eyes, she came back with light in her eyes. And I said to the counselor, "What happened? what happened up there with Anael? He goes, wait and see. Wait and see. Listen tonight. That night was the talent show. She had the courage to get up in the talent show in front of her peers, and she said, in my 2 hours alone with God, I wrote a song. And it was unbelievable. And the chorus was basically translated, I don't have anything special. If my life seems ruined, help me to restore it. Show us the way and bring us to the light. You are my God. You are my Father. You are what I want most in this universe. God is changing hearts at this camp. It sells out every year with kids who want to come and hear this message. And so we thank you for all the years you've been a part of our lives and been such a blessing to us and how much you've prayed for us. And we just ask that you would pray for us in this transition and pray for these campers who are coming now and reserving now to come and hear the message. So we thank you for that. Do we have time for questions? What do you think?
Sure.
Okay. Do you have questions for Rick or I? With dinner, 7 hours. So, do you have questions for Rick and I?
Yes, sir.
What's in that area where the camp is, in that part of France, what's the economic base? I mean, the agriculture, the industry, or what?
There is, in that area, there's a lot of tourism because of the Alps. It's also a bicycle mecca, the Tour de France type thing. So there's a lot of tourism all year round there. There is some farming in the area, although where we are, it's so high that they don't have the farming, but they do have
cows,
cheese, goats, sheep. The actual crops are a little lower in where we are. There is some mining in the area, and they have hydroelectric power that's done in that area too. And so that's basically what goes on there.
The rivers are really fast, ice cold, and aqua from the minerals in the glaciers that are really interesting. 500 kinds of cheeses, so there's a lot of cows. Really good cheese, most of them.
Yes. The cost of the camp is expensive by most people's standards, but the benefit of doing, there's two benefits for the English language part. One, because people want to come. But two, the French government will actually subsidize some of the cost for the campers because they want them to improve their English. And so because we offer that, people who probably couldn't afford it otherwise can afford it. But I think for us to be there as volunteers last summer, it was $23 a day.
23 euros a day, which is about $25.
Room and board.
Room and board.
For the two of us.
And it's three-course meals. They're French. So the baguette man comes every morning and brings just a lot of loaves of bread. And but the food's amazing. It was really good. A lot of dishes, though. Three-course meals, 100 campers.
A lot of dishes.
Dishes.
Well, I mean, the roads are really good. But you are, you know, depending on what you're driving, and it's funny because the people who live in the area, okay, on the license plates in France, you have a number which relates to the region you're from. And so one time we were going up the mountain and I was riding with one of the local guys, and the person in front of us was going pretty slow. And he goes, oh, they're from such and such a region, which is all just flat. He goes, they know nothing about driving in the mountains. He goes, they're probably scared up there. He goes, we're just going to be here a while. But other people were just right up, because they do it all the time. In fact, we took the kids up to one place, and literally they had pull-offs every so often because it was a one-lane road. And this side of the road was nothing. I mean, it just dropped off. And so you're going to, and some people were, I mean, the people who were locals, I mean, they were just like right down this thing. And we're driving, and Ellen's like, ah, you're pretty close. I'm like, well, I don't have any room over here either, because here's the wall of the cliff, and here's where it drops off. So, but...
it felt like Morocco.
Yeah, it did, actually. So.
My mom said, never take me on that road. I said, I would not. It was...
Yes. Yeah, we go back in the middle of May, and we'll drive up there and be there for June to try to get our bank set up and our phones and start the residency card work and get a place close by where we can have our stuff stored, because we have no place to put it right now, but there's some things that are in our things that we have in storage that we need for camp.
Poster
and there's
board.
Just the process of going
construction
through.
Paper.
So there's all kinds of that we have to do in June, plus the work to get the camp ready, and then July we'll kick off with camp. So.
And our son gets married in the end of September in Colorado,
yes.
So we're flying to Colorado for about 10 days to be there for that, and then we can't see them at Christmas then because of that, but... our oldest
yes.
is Luke. He just finished his 2 years. He's in the Air Force. He just finished his 2 years of tech training. The Air Force trained him to be a linguist in Levantine Arabic. It's a dialect of Arabic. It's an unwritten language. It's the dialect of Syria, specifically, obviously. So he's listening in on ISIS. And it's a dialect that he said is a little bit hillbilly. So as he's listening in to things, you know, he says they're talking about because, you know, it's bugging devices. And so it's challenging, but he's in Omaha right now. So tomorrow night we go back and see him. And he leaves the 29th of April for his first duty station in the Washington, D.C. area in Maryland. And for Christmas, we'll fly his sister out to see him because we can't be with them. But they can be together, so that'll be really fun. Our second son.
He's in Omaha right now. He's actually stationed in Colorado Springs?
No, he was at language school in
California,
in Monterey. Then he went to Texas for about 3 or 4 months of more training, and now he's on leave, and he'll be heading out to the East Coast
to Maryland.
For his first job.
Yeah, he's never been there. That's his thing. Okay, so that was Luke. Zeke is our second born, and he graduates from Grace University in Omaha on May 5. He just got engaged to his girlfriend from Grace, and she is so wonderful. We're so thankful not only that we've got a chance to get to know her over the years, but that she's joining our family, and she's so weird and fits in really well with us. So we're thankful. She's great. And so... they're planning their wedding in September, and God is so good. You know, my mom's heart, there's so many things I love about our life, but the thing I just hate is that it's so far from our children, and I love my role as a mom. And so God had it be that I was here, and Zeke said, "Mom, will you help me plan this proposal surprise?" And he had me take him shopping, and we got him a suit, and all these mom things. I feel like I'm all filled up again, and so that's really neat. So they're getting married, and he's moving to Colorado over the summer. He's going to look for an apartment. They're getting married in September. He's applying for Army Officer Candidate School. They have said that they will give him a delayed entry of a year so he can be married for a year. I mean, it's the military, so you never know if what they say is going to stay what they say. Because it didn't for Luke. When he took that test for a linguist, it went from, you can delay entry till September, to you're leaving in 5 weeks and becoming a linguist. So it is what it is. So pray for them as they're newly married. And then our youngest is Dakota, and she is taking college courses in early childhood education. And she's working part-time at a Christian daycare center. And eventually she wants to be a nanny, which she does not need a degree for, but she was getting the degree as just to give her time to get used to living in America. She was very young when we moved away, and so she needed time to learn how they do things, what they mean when they say things. It just takes time, and so she's been doing that. So, yeah, we're thankful for them. So,
John, you have a question? Did you have a question?
The dishes, you would like it. They have these cool machines, and so it's all these metal machines, and you put them in, and you have to rinse them really quick, and then you put them in these plastic crate things, and you shove them into this thing, and this metal drawer comes down over it, and it's blasting hot boiling water, and it sterilizes them. And then you slide it out, and the air dries them. You can't touch them with a towel. There's all these rules about putting it away. The French are very, very clean. Like in Spain, everything was really dirty. Really dirty, like Africa dirty, you know, because Morocco ruled our province of Spain for 800 years. It leaves its imprint on a culture. The people are very, very Moorish blood because those men stayed and ruled and intermarried. And so Spain is very dirty, but France is really clean, and the inspector comes, and so you have to like turn on the faucet with your hip and wash your hands a certain way, like in a fancy restaurant. It was a lot like a fancy restaurant. They love food. So, and they're so skinny, but they love food.
You can spend hours doing the dishes.
Yes.
Trust me.
Hours. 100 people.
Not just the plates people are eating on, it's all the stuff the cooks were using. That piles up too. So we had meals that
pots.
We liked, and we had meals we wished they didn't make because of the stickiness and the amount of dishes it took to make that.
Yeah.
So
no sauces, please stop with the sauces. That's good. Other questions? We hope it made sense. Please stop by and see our display. There's a book out there with some family pictures and whatnot.